Case number 7, U.S. v. Bennett.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Devers on behalf of the appellant, Stanley Bennett. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, we're here today on appellant's contest of the denial of his motion to suppress by the district court. The court denied the motion to suppress the evidence, which consisted of a revolver found in the home where the defendant was residing with his mother and brother at the time in October of 2009. Mr. Bennett exercised his right and elected to go to trial after the denial of that and was found guilty, and we are here today then contesting the court's finding that that gun could come into evidence. If I may, Your Honors, we have a certain procedural aspect to the search and seizure Fourth Amendment claims that the police are told ought to be followed. They have a reason to suspect the defendant committed a crime. They have a reason to believe that there is evidence of that crime, in this instance, a weapon. But once the defendant is no longer a threat, he's been arrested, as Mr. Bennett had been, anyone else on scene was accounted for, as his girlfriend, Ms. Harris, had been, and as his mother and his brother inside the home, Charlie and Mary Bennett, had been. After the police were allowed to and did conduct a protective sweep, which is to ensure that the house is clear of other individuals that may pose a threat, after they see nothing in plain view that would lead them to believe there is contraband or easily recognizable contraband in the home, after they have no exigent circumstances for they were able to determine that Mary Bennett and Charlie Bennett were safe, no one else was in the home that had been injured in any way, and they had a conversation regarding consent to search the home further, which the government concedes, even at the district court level, is not at issue here because there may well have been some issues with Ms. Bennett's providing that knowing and voluntary consent to the property. So if the police officers go through all of that that they've been told they should do, they must stop. Even Officer Ealing, at the motion to suppress hearing, said, I was sitting outside and I was determining that if nothing was found and if we couldn't get consent, again, consent having been conceded is not an issue here, then I would have had to get a search warrant. But they didn't. Because the officer's conduct in this case was so egregious that they went beyond that standard protocol and voided any search warrant being sought. So what we're doing here is we're asking the court to hold the police to the process of doing what is right and to avoid the egregious conduct as they committed here. In the instant case, they immediately go into the home after Mr. Bennett and Ms. Harris are safe outside. They're no longer a threat. They immediately ask Charles Bennett, the brother, where does Stanley stay at? Which room is his? And they proceed there, according to Charles Bennett, immediately, up the stairs. And they search his home, his room, and they ransack it, according to his brother. They find no contraband. They find no weapon. They are in the home. Charles Bennett says, I'm upstairs with them. They don't even look in the closets. If this were a protective suite, why don't they look in the closets? They don't look in the third bedroom upstairs. They come back downstairs. They don't look in the basement. They look in the house, but they're in there for about 20 minutes, according to Charlie and Mary Bennett. And a key point, Charlie and Mary Bennett testified that the gun was located before they sought, the police officer sought consent from Mary Bennett to search that home further. Now, that's in contradiction to what the police officers say, but Mary and Charlie are very, very certain of that. So once they found the weapon, which is located underneath a sofa in the living room, where Officer Llewellyn even said, I wouldn't have found a human being. It's about a 2-inch space underneath that sofa in the living room with a skirt that hangs down. So that was not part of a protective sweep. It was not in plain view. He had to actually get down to look under there. So he is committing egregious conduct that's not allowed if he's doing a protective sweep. The district court found, and the government argues, that, well, the doctrine of inevitable discovery applies. That even though the officers may well have been out of line, may well have looked too hard and too far before they got consent, may have violated certain terms and conditions of our Fourth Amendment rights, the fact remains they still could have gotten a search warrant. Or the fact remains that there could have been exigent circumstances. We concede they could well have gotten a search warrant, and perhaps that would have cured on its face their egregious conduct.
So then why don't you speak to this inevitable discovery doctrine, which the government says it would have been discovered anyway had a search warrant been issued?
Yes, Your Honor. And there are 3 points under this court's case in Green, citing Brown versus Illinois from the United States Supreme Court, that talks about 3 factors, the immediacy of the police officer's illegal actions, that there were no intervening circumstances, or if there were intervening circumstances, and was there any other purpose to the misconduct? It is our position, Your Honors, that the police immediately conducted their illegal activity. They went into the home and went upstairs right away. There was no real protective sweep. That was a pretext on their part. There were no intervening circumstances. The police came in. They waited 20 minutes, according to Charlie and Mary, but that wait was actually an ongoing search of the premises, not to decide what to do further. Recalling again, they immediately asked, where does Stanley reside at? And there was no other purpose of their misconduct other than to find the weapon. So we believe, Your Honor, that it does not apply in this, and that sooner or later we must hold police accountable for what we say is the proper process for going through a search, for going through a request for a protective sweep, for going through a consent. In this instance, the government even concedes the consent was questionable, and what steps they must go through before they look into places where a person could not be. With that, I will say what I have for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Leslie Miller-Lowry on behalf of the United States. The district court in this case did not commit error by denying Mr. Bennett's motion to suppress. The entry into the house was justified under the exigent circumstances doctrine, and the subsequent recovery of the gun was inevitable.
Well, counsel says everybody was out of the house. You knew where the officers knew where everything was. So how could it be exigent circumstances? You have what? The fact that it's a live gun because it had been fired?
Yes, Your Honor. What we have was the fact that Mr. Bennett, in the presence of an officer, fired a gun, ignored the officer's commands to drop the gun, went into the house with the gun, and came out of the house a short time later without the gun. At that time, the officers did not know who else may be in the house that either needed assistance, because the initial call was a shots fired call. They did not know who else may be in the house that may pose a threat to officers. And you had an erratically behaving, drunken Stanley Bennett firing a gun. So it's entirely reasonable to believe that he did not render that gun safe when he went into the house. So the initial entry into the house was made at a point in time when officers did not know who was in the house or what condition anyone in the house may have been.
But once they got in the house, they found 2 unarmed individuals. They didn't have any weapons. So everybody in the house was accounted for, right?
They did account for everyone in the house during the course of a protective sweep. They did not conduct a protective sweep, back everyone out of the house, get the consent, and then go re-enter the house. It was certainly a more fluid situation than that. The officer testified that he did not, and the government has never argued that the gun in this case was recovered during a protective sweep. It was recovered after the officer who found the gun was advised that there had been consent given by Mrs. Bennett. So the fact
and that consent is disputed, right?
There is a dispute. The government did not proceed in its brief or in the second filing to the district court following the evidentiary hearing in this matter on the issue of consent.
Right, because his position is the consent occurred after the gun was filed. That's the defense position. I understand the government's position was no, it was before.
Right. And arguably the issue of consent certainly could have been handled better, could have been dealt with better. That's why the government, while not conceding that there was anything wrong with the consent, did not proceed on the issue of consent, but because there are other legal theories that clearly justify the actions that were taken by the police. With regard, now that we have a legal entry into the house under exigent circumstances, we've certainly accounted for the individuals in the house. The government's position is that the firearm in this case was not recovered until after the officer got what he thought was a consent. If there's an issue with the consent, the government still contends that under the inevitable discovery doctrine, this firearm in this case would have been discovered anyway. The inevitable discovery doctrine provides that if the government can show by a preponderance that there is a series of events, a chain of events that would have led to the lawful discovery of the gun, then the purposes that animate the exclusionary rule have no real purpose here. And the government contends that that's exactly what the facts show here. Mr. Bennett was seen by the officer arriving, firing a gun in the officer's presence. That constitutes the crime of criminal recklessness under Indiana Code. The officer has now seen Mr. Bennett commit a felony in his presence. The officer then runs into the house with a loaded gun, immediately comes back out of the house without the loaded gun. The officer at that time has probable cause, certainly, to secure a search warrant to look for the gun that's presumably in the house. So notwithstanding the issue of consent, had there never been consent given, had consent never even been broached as an issue with Mr. Bennett's mother, the gun in this case would have been recovered because the officers would not have left this situation or this incident having not located that gun. And if it needed to be located after securing a search warrant, that's what would have been done.
And that's really your best argument, isn't it? Inevitable discovery.
Yes, and as the court can see from the government's brief in this case, that's where we put most of our focus, was on the issue of inevitable discovery in this case, is that there is no circumstance or series of events that would have, in this case, led to that firearm not being recovered, both as a legal matter and as a safety matter for officers. They did not know what was in that house. If they turned their back and left, they don't know who in the house could have gained access to the weapon. So for those reasons, the government contends that the finding by the district court or the denial of the motion to suppress by the district court was not error, and we ask that this court find such and affirm the conviction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I just sum up that our position is that the exclusionary rule, if relied upon in the vein of inevitable discovery each and every time, is taken, or what's taken from it is its prophylactic use in police and law enforcement. They should know this is the procedure they need to go through. It's very, very simple. But instead, they trample through the rights of the people in the home, they trample on the rights of the defendant, and then claim, well, no harm, no foul, because we would have found it anyway. And sooner or later, we have to tell them, no, follow the process. Unless there are other questions, on behalf of Mr. Bennett, I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for taking the appointment in this case as well.
Thank you.